Hello, I'm Ian Bowyer. This is the Green Jumper podcast with Marcus Alton.
If he's coming on, give him my love.
Yes, I'm Marcus from the tribute website brianclough.com, and in this episode we're going back to May 1980 and Brian Clough's second European Cup final with Nottingham Forest. And the lead-up to the match in Madrid against the German side Hamburg was conducted in typical Clough fashion. He took the players away for a sunshine break in Mallorca.
We regarded European competitions, the few days we got off, as a holiday. We used them as a holiday. Lads are well fed, well looked after, change of faces. To get rid of me for 2 days was the biggest boost I could give them.
Well, relaxation was certainly the order of the day, or make that order of the week. And for Ian Bowyer, who'd won the European Cup with Clough's Forest the previous year, a bit of rest and recuperation after a long, hard season was very much welcome.
Well, I think it's common knowledge now that the top athletes, the Olympic athletes, they go away and do warm weather training, and there has to be something in it. Perhaps we were ahead of the game in terms of understanding that. We used to not get knocked about on the training ground. We used to save most of our energies for the game, and he was an absolute master at preparing you for games. It's all those old story, isn't it? Once the glass is empty, you've no more to give, then you are far better to save a little bit. And we saved from game to game, and we didn't get hammered at the training ground. We saved our strength and our energies for the big games.
Among the squad in Mallorca was 18-year-old Gary Mills, who would go on to create history as the youngest player in a European Cup final. I spoke to Gary about the unusual preparation for the game. And of course, it culminated in you playing in the second European Cup final, and shall we say a very relaxed preparation for such a big game.
I like it, Marcus. I like how you say that. It certainly was. It certainly was. But it was his way of relaxing us, taking our minds off it, getting us away from all the press and all the, headlines and everything. So we were sat on a beach and we was having a few beers and not really thinking about the following week when the game was coming around. And all I can say is genius, absolute genius from the management of doing that. Again, not realizing that was the case at the time, really. And he was way, way ahead of his time when doing things like that. And, again, obviously everybody have heard this many times, but we never trained once that week. In fact, we hardly trained when we actually got to Madrid. Where Schultz, I trained Schultz, as everybody knows, on a roundabout in Madrid. So you couldn't make it up, could you? You really couldn't.
It was you taking shots at Peter Shilton, was it? On the traffic.
Yeah, myself and Jimmy Gordon, and the gaffer said, young Millsy, go and get that bag of balls and go and train Peter, because Peter wants to train. And so me and Jimmy Gordon were on this roundabout, and he was throwing balls to me and I was volleying them to Shields.
For Martin O'Neill, patience certainly paid off. He'd been left devastated after being left out of the team for the 1979 final. But that changed a year later, and this is what he told me.
Well, the only way you get over the disappointment is that actually if you participate in another one. And by 1979, the chances of Nottingham Forest going back to win another European Cup would be few, I think, that would have thought that could have happened. And for instance, Archie Gemmell missed out as well too. And Archie was transferred to Birmingham City a couple of months later. So from that viewpoint, Marcus, it was uh, it was really disappointing because you never think you're going to get a chance again.
But you did play, obviously, in the 1980 European Cup final. Mm-hmm. And it was actually at half time in that match that you got the praise that you'd been seeking all that time. What actually happened?
What had happened? We'd come in. John had given us the lead. John Robertson had given us the lead, and we were doing fine. But we know, you know, that Hamburg, with all the players that they had at their disposal, would be coming really at us, particularly strongly in the second half for this equaliser. And I think the club was venturing to make some sort of positional change at the time. Not exactly sure what it was, but I kind of semi-volunteered to go into this position that he was looking for. And that's when he said, "No, son, you know, I'm sorry, I'm very poor at doing his accent. It was, no, son," he said, "you're doing brilliantly where you are." And Marcus, what a lift that gave you, you know, for the second half. You know, it's in just those words coming from him, you know, like an adrenaline lift coming right through your body again and thinking, well, wow, this is great. He actually thinks you're doing really well.
Yes. I think in your marvellous tribute at the memorial service, you said that once he'd given you that encouragement, it was as if your heart would burst with the enthusiasm and energy to play for him.
Absolutely. And I not just me, but I felt that in spades, I have to say. But it's the same with all the players. We were looking for that approval from him. It was as if he was the godfather of football. He knew everything about the game. He knew us inside out. And you just wanted to sit at his right-hand table. That was really about it, I think.
Another player keen to gain Clough's approval was John Robertson, who scored the winning goal. When I interviewed him for the Green Jumper, I showed him a classic photo taken moments after his shot beat the goalkeeper.
When you think of that photo, which I've got here, of your hands in the air on the front of that programme there, can you remember what went through your mind?
It's just that I've scored. I remember, so as I hit it, thinking, it's got a chance. And it swerved away from the goalkeeper, hit the post and went in. And I remember turning around with my hands in the air and saying, I scored. But soon, I got surrounded with the boys, as you see there in that picture.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe I'd scored a goal.
It was incredible, because you cut in on the right and hit it with your right foot. And unlike some left-wingers, you really did have a fantastic right foot as well, didn't you?
Well, that's because I was right-footed. Seriously.
Yeah.
I was naturally right-footed.
Before the game, Clough had a friendly jibe at Robertson by saying he had a little fat guy who would turn Hamburg's Manny Kautz inside out. And he did just that. Clough was quick to add that Robertson was a highly talented and skilled player. John told me he knew Clough was just having a bit of fun when he referred to his appearance. In fact, the Forest boss described him as the Picasso of our game.
Just to revisit that Cloughy quote in full, he said that give him a ball and a yard of grass and he was an artist, the Picasso of our game. How did you feel when he said things like that?
Oh, absolutely fantastic. A player, a man of his stature and the reputation in the game, to think I was a good player was really, really great.
And he came to me one Saturday and said, you've got to get these spectators off my back, because there was a certain section of spectators giving him some stick before he'd actually touched the ball. And it was my job to walk along the track, so to speak, and just have a word, quiet word, no Anglo-Saxon language, because I never used to delve into that at that time. Not much I didn't. I just had to say, get off his back, because he's going to be here a long time. And once we'd settled the so-called discussion or argument, then he settled down completely. We educated the fans to John Robertson, because he wanted people to realise what he'd got. All they saw was a little fat lad who couldn't run, and they weren't looking at what he had got.
For Gary Mills, there were soon new instructions as Forrest soaked up wave after wave of Hamburg attacks. I asked Gary if before the game, Clough had given him any particular advice.
Let it flow, go and do your job. You know what your job is. I was playing up front with Gary Birtles, and after 10 minutes, I was told to come back and play as in midfield, and we'd never ever. So I'd go and do my job, but I didn't know what my job was to go back into midfield. And all it was really was to fill the gap where, you know, they had so much of the ball that we ended up playing 4-5-1. Well, I think it's the first time Forest had ever played 4-5-1. It just happened to be in the European Cup final, something we'd never worked on on the training field.
Yeah.
And I was told to go and do a job there, and that's exactly what I'd done. You know, with good players around me. It's incredible, really. You couldn't make it up.
It was a fantastic team effort all round, but Forest kept a 1-0 lead largely due to some outstanding saves from Peter Shilton. Green jumper guest Viv Anderson recalls just how important Shilton was.
Many times when they actually broke our line, got past Lloyd and Burns, and going through against one-on-one with Peter Shilton, you knew you would save it. Because the boy whoever's going through are thinking, this colossus there, now I've got to try and beat him. And invariably, they never did.
Shilton would later say that night was the highlight of his career. And of course, it was also special for John Robertson, whose photo was on the front page of Scotland's Daily Record the next day.
Does anything get any better than scoring the winning goal in the European Cup final?
Well, no. It's a fantastic individual achievement for myself. And because you get the goal, people remember who you are and they always look back. And, you know, that old television programme, there's always who gets a goal. But I was fortunate in playing with some fantastic footballers who were, in their own right, great players. You don't win two European Cups without having great players. And the players I played with were top draw.
I remember standing at the City Ground gates in the early 80s on my own, and you were walking in on your own, and I asked for your autograph, and I told you you were my favourite player, and you signed my autograph book, and you're still my favourite player.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for all the great memories.
My pleasure. Thank you for asking.
For Gary Mills, it was an incredible experience for a lad still 6 months short of his 19th birthday. Under the guidance of Brian Clough, he'd achieved as a teenager what most players could only dream about.
It was about me turning into a man at 14, and that was his words to me. And he certainly made sure that happened from the age of 14, with me playing in the Central League at that age, which was a tough, tough league.
Yeah.
Against quality first-team players. And just really giving me rollickings when I needed them, and giving me a pat on the back and telling me how good I was and how good I was going to be when I needed to be. And to be honest, it was 2 years of growing up that was incredible for me. It was not realising at that age that's what he was doing, which then enabled me to make my debut at 16, you know, being part of the first team. I was training with the first team coming up in school holidays, and being treated like a first team player. So it was an incredible time for me. You know, we were one big family. And I think that was, you know, a lot of the key to the success. It is, you know, as I'm saying that to you now, I'm getting shivers down my spine, because, you know, unless you were part of that, it's hard really to understand, maybe. But, you know, we still get together. When we get together, it's special times, and we still laugh and take the mickey out of each other. But we all respect each other and know what we achieved and how we achieved it. People talk to me now about the money in the game of football, and I always say I'm not interested. You know, I would never ever swap those years that make me rich in memories. You know, which is special.
Some wonderful memories there from May 1980. And you can hear the full interviews with John Robertson, Gary Mills, Martin O'Neill, Ian Bowyer and Viv Anderson in the Green Jumper back catalogue. Just have a scroll through and you'll find some fantastic stories. And if you're enjoying the Green Jumper, please give us a 5-star review. It all helps. And visit the Tribute website, where there are more Cluffy memories, along with the online shop, with books and souvenirs supporting good causes. My Cluffy books are available there. I'll sign copies with your personal message.
Don't forget I love you and be good.
Thanks very much for listening, and I hope you'll join me again next time for more memories of the great man in the Green Jumper.